Hey, are you hungry? Well, you're in luck. Meat and Three is back for season 16. I'm Taylor Early, and we've got a whole new batch of reporters I am so excited to introduce you to.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Fisher.
Asha McElroy.
Sam Girardi.
Jessica Gingrich.
Hannah from Wisconsin.
I'm a swing dancing audio engineer.
I am a future registered dietitian nutritionist.
I'm from New York, and I love rice and beans.
My favorite food of all time is a shrimp burrito.
I love watermelon.
We've also got a bonus podcast for you called Behind the Internship. Three of our reporters will take you along to show how they develop stories for this very show, Meat and Three.
Hi, I'm Danielle Flitter, a plant-based chef from Philadelphia, living in Mexico City.
I'm Sophia Hooper. I'm a bartender based in Portland, Maine.
My name is Addison Austin Liu. I am a chef and food journalist from Salt Lake City, Utah, and my favorite food is Peruvian.
Rice and beans.
Hand-drawn noodle soup.
So tune in to enjoy a square meal for your ears. And I hope you saved a little room for dessert.
My name is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, a super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border, coast to coast, and all the ships at sea. Streaming live from the County of Kings, Brooklyn, New York City, on the Heritage Radio Network. Are you ready for the fastest half hour on the internet today? It's the Mike and Judy Show, spanning the globe for high-minded hijinks and lowbrow kicks to bring you the best in sex, drugs, rock and roll, and nuclear fission. They're too bad for radio and too good-looking for television. And now, here they are, to pluck the low-hanging fruit of the literati. Your hosts, Mike Edison and Judy McGuire.
Bonjour.
Judy, you're speaking French.
I prefer the French pronunciation, Judy.
Judy, well, pourquoi? Why are you speaking French today, Judy?
Because I just got back from a fabulous Parisian vacation.
Well, do tell. While you were in Paris, of course, I was having Thanksgiving with my family. I think this round goes to you. Yeah, you're telling me. So how was Paris?
Paris was spectacular. It was the most fun vacation of my life.
And what did you see? Did you go to the catacombs?
You
didn't go to the catacombs? I thought for sure that boyfriend of yours would have dragged you down to Death Central.
Well, once I heard it was seven stories underground, I was a lot less interested. And it's apparently very cramped, and I started getting hyperventilating. But we went to Père Lachaise, which was beautiful, the big cemetery. Mm-hmm. We saw Oscar Wilde's grave, and that was kind of cool because this old man came up to the grave while we were there with this younger woman, and he's telling her the story in French because the grave next to it is this ornate monument with a cross that's been, like, crushed on top of it. And, you know, they don't repair things so quickly there. And he was telling her that some jackass, I have to assume is American, climbed up on the cross to try and kiss Oscar Wilde's grave and broke it to shit and, like, had to be hospitalized and stuff. That was a highlight. And also the Museum of Magic was just like the coolest place I've ever been.
That crazy exterminator with the rats in the window.
Oh, yeah, that was good. We were like, oh, Italian sausages across the street because there's all these white things hanging. But no, they're like taxidermied rats from 1924.
Well, while you were off in Paris, I was with my family.
Your sainted mother?
My sainted mother, getting dirty looks every time I opened another bottle of beer.
Michael!
Yeah, it was a lot like that. But so much to give thanks for, though, Judy.
Yes.
And
so much.
And it's your favorite time of year, too.
It is. I'm going to the John Waters Christmas show tomorrow night, schlepping up to Tarrytown.
I would join you, except I'm going to go see Neil Young tomorrow night in Brooklyn, right here in Brooklyn. Very excited with Patti Smith.
I want to hear how that stadium is.
That's Hanukkah. That's my Hanukkah present to myself. Is it true that you're not getting a tree this year? Okay. You need a tree for reasons that are going to become obvious next week. That's all I'm going to say.
I need a tree. I've never not had a Christmas tree.
You are Miss Christmas.
Life.
You are like the Christmas person.
I know.
You're the only person I know who revels in it. So
I know.
Much.
Well, that's because I can't even. Well, my family is different than they were. When my parents were both alive, it was very tense because my mother tended to make big holidays tense. Go figure.
Yeah, but seriously.
And I'm not happy she's dead by any stretch, but holidays have a different dynamic now. But anyway, we have three exciting guests today.
Three of the best minds of Brooklyn. Well, first we have our old friend Jason Diamond here from Volume 1, Brooklyn, and also you're an editor at Flavor Pill. Mm-hmm. And we're here with Halima Marcus and Ben Samuel from Electric Literature, one of my very favorite websites and literary portals. We're completely awesome. Say hello, guys.
Hi, everybody.
Don't be shy.
Hello.
Hello.
And you guys really are at the very vanguard of this Brooklyn literary thing. Whatever the hell that is, right?
I'm still trying to figure
it out. So what is it exactly you do over there at Volume 1, Jason?
I mean, it's a combination of the daily website, myself and a few editors, update news. We have interviews, essays, everything. And then our events that we do.
And your events are good. We're going to talk about that, too. We have a heavy metal reading coming up
soon.
That
you're doing.
And you guys over at Electric Literature, and thank you. You've been so supportive of me personally. And I love your website. I love the required reading blog. Is that a blog? Do we call it a blog?
Recommended reading.
Recommended reading. I'm sorry. and
you're
I have
boss
the flask.
Here.
I have the flask, too.
We're in no position to require anyone to do anything.
So how's it going over there? Why is it... What do you guys do? Why do you do what you do? It seems like a lot of work. And who's reading it?
Well, hopefully everyone's reading it. But, you know, essentially, it's a fiction magazine. It's one piece of fiction a week, and it's carefully curated by all these literary tastemakers. Mm-hmm. So we have different editors, we have different magazines. They all kind of recommend one piece of fiction, and then we just get it out there to anyone who needs something to read.
So we publish on Tumblr once a week, one story a week, and we do that because we found that's the best way to get the most people reading fiction. We bring fiction to where people already are. Every story is free for at least a week, so when we post it, you can click through straight from Twitter, straight from Facebook, and there's really no barrier to access.
I love it. I think it's great. I think the short story form and short form writing is something that's been so overlooked, and I think it's one of the best things this digital revolution, such as it is that people can now publish essays, we call them blogs, or in the 140 character sense Twitter posts. But now there's actually a venue where you can read short stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I've always been a fan of short stories. I mean, I remember Isaac Singer used to say it was the hardest thing to do is write a short story. I've always found them.
No, Jason, the hardest thing is to get a short story published.
Yeah. I was going to say it's the hardest thing to sell one more.
Yeah, definitely. If you get one, you're pretty blessed. But I've always been a fan of shorter pieces. I read several novels at a time, but I tend to like the short form more, which is, I think, why what Electric Literature does is so important.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
So do you guys ever go to print?
Well, we started off with a print quarterly that published in every format. Mm-hmm. That's Scott and Andy founded the publication in 2009. Now, as a weekly publication, print's not feasible for us, and not really necessary for publishing one story a week.
What about a collection, though?
I think we're definitely open to that in the future, doing an anthology. We're actually have some exciting things coming up in February. We're publishing our first full-length ebook.
Great.
By Sam Pink. We're partnering with Lazy Fascist, which is a really cool independent press that's put out a bunch of his novels. So we're doing the ebook edition of that, and then in April we're gonna put out the ebook of some Carson Mell's book, who we published in issue 5. So he's
and
a great author.
With Sam Pink, Lazy Fascist is going to do the print edition. So we'll have sort of like this multi-format thing, but we'll be partnering just on the digital side.
Well, what do we think about all this? I mean, publishing things strictly in an e-format or doing both? I had the odd experience. I just published my last. It's a novella. It's my first actual piece of fiction. And some people didn't want to review it because it was primarily an ebook. I did a limited edition print run as well, which was kind of arty. And like I said, that's the City Lights version. You know, it was numbered to 300. And it was hand bound and silkscreened. But people didn't want to review it. I got some feedback that we don't review ebooks, which I think is completely ridiculous.
Well, publishing is kind of anachronistic. A lot of it.
It is, but the people that wouldn't review it were websites.
That's crazy. Wow, that's just idiotic.
It's like you work in a digital platform, but you still. I know print is sexy. Everybody likes ink on paper, and Judy and I both have magazine experience as well, and everybody always wants to be in the magazine and doesn't want to be in the website.
Well, the magazine pays better, for one thing. Like, Esquire.com pays $50 for a feature.
I couldn't believe that what they
it's
offered
insane.
You.
It's insane.
Well, I think it's sort of like, I always bring it back to, because I grew up going to punk shows, And when I was a kid, labels like Matador or Merge or Discord or Kill Rock Stars, they couldn't get...
Yeah, Matador is hardly punk rock, dude.
Well, yeah, now. But, no, but, you know, when I was growing up, those were the labels that, you know, they were putting out stuff that I liked. And they couldn't get, you know, they couldn't get records reviewed in magazines. And now it's the norm. You know, you're quote-unquote indie and you're... gold, and I think it's going to end up being that way with ebooks one day as well.
It's funny, my brother, we were talking at Thanksgiving, and all of a sudden he's discovered, do they still call it indie rock? Or alt rock? Yeah. What is it? I can't even tell. That was a problem. I couldn't explain to him, you know, whether Sonic Youth was an indie band or not.
They were
but,
once.
They were, but then they weren't, but then they are again, I think, you know, or... You know, some of these bands were, you know, Jack White certainly owns the world, but I mean, when is it alternative? When does the indie stop? And there's so many labels. And he just basically said, oh, so you mean like your friends are indie rock because they're not good enough to be on a major label.
Wow. I think about indie music a lot when I think about digital publishing, actually, because in music, you know, I think there's a thing where the digital file can be paired with an LP that doesn't really happen. I love that advance where you started buying, if you bought a new LP, it always came with a digital download code after, or it usually does, you know, after a certain point. But with reading, you don't really have the need to have the print edition unless you're a collector.
Well, there are some books that are just, like there are some books, I had a Kindle until I tragically lost it, but I resisted it for a long time, but there are still some books, even though I enjoy reading on it. Like, I have to buy the book, like the Wona Rovich biography. I just needed it because I wanted the pictures. I wanted to reread it. I wanted to, like, have it more accessible. But, you know, like...
Well, books are objects. I mean, it's like Book Plus sometimes. When it's done right and something that's lovely, I mean, I'm sure all of us, if you walk into our houses, are just filled with books, spilling off, you know, the bookcases. And also vinyl records and stuff. I mean, they're art objects. Have you seen the Richard Brautigan biography that Counterpoint Soft Skull did? It's the size of a phone book. It's a $50 book. I can't believe... I'm so proud of, you know, the Soft Skull guys as much as... Our personal experiences, Judy and I are both published by Soft Skull, you know, didn't rocket us to stardom, that he would actually invest in like, seriously, it must be like a 230,000 word biography. It's massive and gorgeous, and it weighs more than we all do. And to me, it's like, it just wouldn't work in a Kindle.
Yeah.
It's just, I mean, it's just this totem of accomplishment that someone wrote, you know, this biography. And of course, I'm a big Richard Brautigan fan. So for me, getting it in the mail was like, it was holy cow. It was like Christmas and, you know, Hanukkah and birthday all rolled into one. And to me, that's the power of an object of a book when it's that good.
Well, that seems to be like kind of a trend now, especially with you know, the rise of digital, is that, you know, there is more thought and consideration put into the print editions of books. You know, they are art objects now. You know, you want to have it and display it and that sort of thing.
Show people how smart you are.
I see an author that I like, somebody who's on an indie press, and they're a great author, you know, I love their work, and then I see like this crappy looking cover, you know, just thrown together book, I'm like, oh man.
You see the same thing on big publishers too, some bad artwork all the time.
Yeah.
Boy, oh boy. Well, the problem with the indie press is probably authors have too much control.
Right.
And as a guy who sat on both sides of the desks, I've been a book editor for years as well, never let authors get anywhere near the designer. Generally speaking, you know, I find the exceptions, and I'd like to put myself in that category. We came from punk rock and roll, where we controlled our own artwork and we knew good designers and we were part of the process. We got how important it was to package stuff and to look competitive, and we were making flyers all these years, and I don't design my own book covers, but I do work closely with the designer, because usually we get, you wouldn't believe the stuff that people say, this is the cover of my book, and it's, you know, some picture of the author. You know, the book could be, it'll be a biography of Van Halen, you know, or...
Yeah, if you're like Dita Von Teese, that works, but
most... Yeah, but people want their own picture, and with their Commodore 64, they put some type on it, you know?
The place for design in digital publishing is also a sort of interesting question. I mean, we try to really keep our website... with, you know, beautifully designed, but, you know, when you publish an ebook, the cover is often only going to be seen as a thumbnail, which changes.
It does, everything. And you know, and again, with like Bye Bye Miss American Pie, we were very conscious that it was going to be seen as a thumbnail first, and it was going to work later as a large poster. But you had to sell it with 1 inch of real estate.
Yeah,
and you have to think about these things. Have you guys seen like Apple's new publishing platform?
The iBooks Author.
It's starting to take off a little bit, right? A little bit, tiny bit.
Yeah, I think right now, though, it seems mostly textbooks are using it.
Textbooks are awesome, dude. I don't know if you... No, the stuff they're doing in textbooks, I borrowed a small friend of mine's kid's iBooks, right? He said, show me what you got, and his history books have come to life. I mean, I know it sounds like Disney, look, these books come to life, but it's true. And, you know, and you push the button, and then charts open up, and then there's an experiment you can see. So far ahead. of what's actually happening, you know, for books for, you know, adults, trade books.
I mean, I find what you're talking about with Apple interesting, but what I'm finding more interesting is how the big publishers are trying to adapt to these new things. There's like Simon & Schuster just announced that they're doing a self-publishing wing where you pay them $15,000 to self-publish. I looked it over, I'm like, this does not make any sense to me. I don't get it.
Because what everybody needs to know, and you know, Judy and I, we're punk rockers. We come from this DIY mentality, is that anybody can do it.
Yeah.
I mean, the joke is, and the same thing with music too, right? You can make a record on your laptop and put it up on the internet, and presumably, if you're on iTunes, you know, you now have the same distribution as Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah.
But somehow it doesn't really...
Or the Mike and Judy show.
Or the Mike and Judy show.
Well, that's always been the beautiful and terrible thing about the internet, is that anyone can do it.
Yeah.
But for us, it's been wonderful because we've been able to make a real impact without a lot of upfront capital, without a lot of people. You know, it's just a few people working really hard.
But are you gonna? Are you making any money?
No,
it's publishing. No one's making any money. But there's
thanks, you know, mom.
With
I just want you to have a nice future.
Oh my god, writing isn't a job.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, having a Thanksgiving flashback.
But with self-publishing now, you know, like you hear these like, you know, fairy tale success stories. You know, where someone self-publishes a book and sells a million copies on Amazon. You know, like you look at like Amanda Hawking, who wrote that fantasy series, but she's no longer self-publishing. You know, like as soon as she reached a certain level of prominence and popularity, she wanted to have, you know, proper representation. She didn't want to sit around and market herself all day long.
No,
she
and of course, that crazy housewife up in Toronto wrote that smutty book, which my mother was reading.
God.
Yeah, you guys had Marty Beckerman on the show once,
yeah,
right?
That's right.
He's
that
a perfect happened. Example.
Yeah, that he was great.
The, yeah, it was like number one bestseller. For I forget what category it was. It was like this book, The Hemingway. And yeah, it was a good book. It was funny. And
now it's out on St. Martin's.
Yeah.
You know, it's catching lightning in a bottle. I mean, Marty's book is awesome, and he caught, you know, somebody's attention. That's perfect. I mean, whatever happened with Fifty Shades of Grey is a fucking mystery to me because it's unreadable swill.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, the funny thing is, you know, look, the crazy thing is people have been publishing erotica for years and not selling it. And all of a sudden, this, you know, fan fiction turned softcore. Has anybody here read it besides me? No. Am I the only one who's actually read
it? I heard Gilbert Godfrey read an excerpt of it. Yeah.
Well, I can't recommend it, except that it's good. It's good to see, to kind of understand like how bad it is, and trying to decipher what part of the zeitgeist it T-boned to be so successful.
Yeah.
You know, I'm at a complete fucking lost. You know, as someone who's written pornography their whole lives.
Well, I mean, Rachel Kramer Bussell has kept herself very busy writing and editing erotica for ages. It's far superior to that.
And Rachel has got to be like the premier erotica editor, you know, in the land. I mean, she's so prolific. The books just keep coming, and there's bondage porn, and there's this fantasy and that fantasy. It's great, and boy,
I want her to have some of that money.
Yeah, I agree. I'll tell you what, Judy, let's take a break. We've got some music from our friends at Daptone Records. Once again, it's the Mike and Judy Show here in Bushwick on the Heritage Radio Network.
You're listening to How Long Do I Have to Wait by Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings on the heritageradionetwork.org.
It's not
Okay, we're back. We're back here on the Mike and Judy Show with our awesome, awesome guests from Electric Literature. I've got our friends Ben Samuels and Helena Marcus and the irrepressible Jason Diamond currently.
Can't be pressed.
You're awesome. You're awesome, dude. So
your shirts are always wrinkled.
What's going on? You've got one of your best 3-minute story events coming up soon?
Yeah, December 11th, which you will be at.
And count that. I'll tell you what. My story's going to be 3 minutes, too.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, not like those other
some
slackers.
Of those people. Oh, my God.
Who do you want? Who? What are we talking about here?
The drummer from whatever band who went on for like 15 minutes?
Yeah.
Can you give us a teaser, Mike? Like 30 seconds?
For the heavy metal story? May tell a condensed version of the time that Ozzy Osbourne stole my pot.
Wow.
That's a good one.
I think that's good. But I... See, yeah, because those slackers... Judy was... I got the whole lowdown. I was getting... I should... Go the live blogging, live texting, or tweeting that you sent me. Waiting.
I was like, I need to go home. I haven't eaten dinner yet.
I'll give you a really funny little piece of three. We've done. This is going to be our 15th 3-minute story series, and a funny piece of trivia. The first one we did, I was like, I'm going to sit on the stage with my iPod, and I'm going to start playing people off if they go on too long.
Yes.
And the one person I did it to. Ever. The only person I ever did it to is Aaron Lefkove. The only person. And he was, one of my groomsmen at my wedding. And
a frequent guest on the Mike and Judy Show. That's Aaron from Little Nick.
He still will not forgive me.
You know what? You did nothing wrong.
I know.
3 minutes?
Three minutes.
Fuck you. Get off the fucking stage.
He wasn't bad. He was fine. I just was like trigger happy. I'm like, I'm doing it. I'm turning.
Okay. First of all, forget your iPhone. Get like a Flavor Flav clock. Mm-hmm. Okay. Like a big motherfucking timepiece. At 3 minutes and 1 second, they get clobbered.
I want the candy. The candy man.
Yeah,
from Late Night at the Apollo.
Do you guys know the Literary Deathmatch series?
Oh, I'm a Literary Deathmatch champion.
Oh, champion as well.
Yeah. All right, dude.
He was the champion at the one Jason was champion when he hosted.
But for their series, if you run over your time limit, they shoot you with a Nerf gun.
That's right. And that's a 7-minute time limit there. And you better believe I had that shit rehearsed.
Yeah.
6 minutes and 50 seconds. And I rehearsed it. Because I'm a professional. Not like the slackers you get at these things, Jason.
Well, that's why you're a champion.
So when I show up at this 3-minute heavy metal stories, I expect to see some professionalism.
Yeah.
Okay? And punk rock, you would think 3 minutes is fine. Heavy metal is going to be like, okay, 12 minutes you're going to be talking
about. 3 minutes is long for punk rock.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, right.
I know.
Three minutes doesn't even get through like the first guitar solo in heavy metal.
I think it was just a lot of people who really wanted to reminisce and be like, I've got a good career now. And
And like back in the day, I was at this bar.
I just like to say, when I did the Literary Deathmatch, celebrity guest Paulina Poroskova said, Mike Edison could read from a tractor manual and I would be interested. I killed that thing.
Yeah. No, it's going to be good. I mean, they're always a lot of fun.
A lot of good writers. Who else is reading at this one?
Dave Hill, who I think is one of the funniest people I know. Brandon Stousey from Pitchfork.com, who's probably my favorite metal writer that I know. Maggie Sirota, who may have been on the show. She's great.
I love Maggie. I follow her closely on Facebook and Twitter. What about you guys? You guys have any events coming up? What's the Electric Literature out in the world?
I think this season we're kind of sitting back for a little bit, so we're just going to everyone else's holiday parties.
holiday parties.
Yeah.
Sorry. Me too. It's the only time I can wear all my sparkly outfits.
I'm looking for a Raging Hanukkah party in the next 2 weeks, so if anybody knows of anything.
You just have to step it up on the festivity front.
Terrible. What are you talking about?
We should have like an 8-day party.
Yeah. Binger.
Yeah.
It's a binger.
Well, Purim is our drunken holiday, right? Purim, we cross dress, and as the
that's a good one.
As the Talmud commands, we get so drunk we no longer remember our names.
Yeah. Well, and then there's Passover, which is my favorite holiday just because it's based around a story. You sit around, you eat food, and you have to drink.
Yeah.
Right? You're not allowed to leave the table without having
four
glasses of wine.
You have to numb the pain that you're hanging around with your family for 8 hours around a table.
So you literary young people here, what do your parents think about this career, this unpaying career path?
Is it a career?
Yeah.
I don't even know.
You guys don't have day jobs, right? This is what you do, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're making a career. I mean, when I said we made no money, we break even. So we're doing okay.
We're making
money
then.
Yeah. I mean, well, we're going to go nonprofit. We're in the process, so we'll then be legally obligated not to make money.
Yeah, we're doing the same thing also.
But we'll probably be like stealing some of this pizza and bringing it home.
Well, Heritage Radio is a 501c. This is nonprofit. And we give our guests pizza.
Yeah
it's delicious incredible. Pizza. But my parents are incredibly supportive. I can't.
Yeah, that's not my experience.
I can't wait to read the book that you're writing about growing up. It's not a book.
It's going to be a book.
Well, maybe when I'm 60, it will be.
Is it the one story thing?
No.
Tell us.
Oh, I just told Judy before we started that
I can't believe this is being made public, but it's nothing.
If you don't want to,
I just started writing about, I grew up in, my parents are part of a Sufi fellowship outside Philadelphia. So I was raised sort of as a Muslim, but and for all you radio listeners who can't see me, I'm white and blonde.
You're really white and blonde.
But you did hear that my name's Halima Marcus, so that's also confusing. Many people think that I'm going to be black before they meet me when we just email.
And then so they're disappointed when you're not? Has that happened? Like an internet
text? Yeah, no, it has happened. It has happened. And so, yeah, so I went to Saudi Arabia. I made the pilgrimage when I was 10, and I used to fast for Ramadan. Wow. I was just like a super weird vegetarian Muslim. So I was trying to write about that a little bit.
I think that's really interesting. Yeah. I mean, a lot of memoir that's out there is... I mean, you're very young, but I don't think that you would be one of those people who just, writes about coming of age. This is an interesting story to anyone. I mean,
and I don't think I'll write memoir. I mean, maybe an essay, but I'm a fiction gal, so we'll see what I can do by making some parts up.
But neither of your websites, neither Volume 1 nor Electric Guru has any real focus on nonfiction or journalism, right?
We do. Volume 1 does a little bit. We're actually moving into having columns in the next couple of months. I write for a bunch of other places, and I mean, I generally focus on nonfiction myself, but we're starting to.
And our blog covers events, and we do some nonfiction there.
The best event coverage in New
York. So what are the criteria? What do you look for when you publish something? There's this whole idea that that it's literature, that it's literary, and this is part of some literary movement. Maybe it's even locally sourced. It's a Brooklyn thing, I think, right? You guys self-identify as like Brooklyn literary people.
We'll still publish like international fiction. Mm-hmm. As long as it's good and grabs you, we'll get it out there.
Not a lot of our writers come from Brooklyn, but we're definitely Brooklyn literary people, whether we like it or not.
it's definitely a vibe, and obviously Brooklyn is the place right now. It's funny, when my first book came out, I said, I'm going to do a tour of Brooklyn, right? It was called the Eye of Fun in Brooklyn Tour, and the people over at FSG were like, what the fuck are you talking about? They wouldn't even buy me a Metro card for this. I said, that's where the people are. That's where people read.
Yeah.
And sure, I could do a gig at a bookstore in New York, and I go down to KGB and some of the bars.
Brooklyn's still New York,
Yes. Well, in the city, what you call the city, Judy.
Yeah.
Judy.
Thank you.
We had the best time. We played in Fort Greene at Frank's Cocktail Lounge, and we did the Capete's Candy Store, and eventually made it out to Bed-Stuy. Like, we've always found these crazy places. I ended up doing like 9 different neighborhoods in Brooklyn, and it was like such a good experience. And I think now, I think people are sort of coming around to that whole idea that you got to bring it to where people are, right?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the events we've put on, we try our hardest to... We work with certain bookstores that we really... there's several indie bookstores in Brooklyn that...
Let's talk about indie bookstores. I mean, these people shall inherit the earth as far as I'm concerned.
I think
Word is fantastic. Word's, they were our book-selling partner for 3 months, so every issue recommended reading, we'd link all the book titles to their store, and we did a reading there. They're fantastic.
Ward and Greenpoint, fantastic bookstore, great people.
I love Greenlight in Fort Greene.
Greenlight's
awesome.
Right down the street from Frank's Cocktail Lounge, my favorite place.
Right down the street from our office, too, a little bit.
I live a block away from Unnameable Books on Vanderbilt, which is
I haven't been there yet.
Oh, my God.
It's good. It's used and new.
Yeah.
I love that.
And there's Molasses Books, which is up here in Bushwick, too. Mm-hmm.
They just opened pretty recently, right?
We're going to have to make a field trip, Judy.
It's used books. And a bar. It's sort of like everything that I love in one place.
Yeah, there's a great bookstore up in Hudson, New York. Ooh, shame on me for not remembering the name. I'll play. It's a bookstore with a bar.
Right.
No, it's a real bar. I mean, they're pouring beer on tap, and there's a full bar in the front of the bookstore. And the events there are great because people are just hanging out and drinking, and then it erupts into a reading.
Yeah, I mean, that's like
erupts into a reading. You don't hear that often.
So many of the events we do, we try to do it where there's liquor.
That's our thing too.
I don't know what you're talking about. Anyway, we only have a couple minutes, so I want to like do a public service and have you guys recommend some books for people, maybe to buy your illiterate relative, something I've been known to do.
That's hard. I find I need people to recommend me books that I can buy for people who aren't readers, because I am in a bubble of readers, and then so I'm all my recommendations are very literary, so to speak.
Well, your mom, as Mike pointed out, your mom needs a copy of 50 Shades of Grey.
Oh, right. And Bye Bye, Miss American Pie.
Right.
Absolutely. My mom, just for the record, has never read any of my books.
Oh, wow.
Wow. It's better that way.
I hope. I aim for that.
Yeah. I told my dad a long time ago, like, don't read it. Don't read anything. He's like, why can't I read your stuff? I go, do you want to hear about my sex life? And he was like,
no.
I really liked, they came out a few years ago, but they were just compiled into a series. Edward St. Aubyn's, the Patrick Melrose novels. That's probably my favorite book of the year. I also really liked, these are two of my friends, so I'm not just shamelessly plugging them, but Adam Wilson, who wrote Flat Screen, and I really liked Emma Strobe's Laura Lamont's Life in Pictures.
Everyone loved that book. I'll check it out.
Those are two really great books and great people.
All right, where can we find you guys? Jason, we're going to find you on the internet and the Twitter and the Facebook.
Yeah, Volume website. In Brooklyn and Twitter. I am Jason Diamond.
What's the website again?
VOL1Brooklyn.com.
And electricliterature.com?
Yep, and you can also go to recommendedreading.tumblr.com.
And we're on Twitter at electriclit.
And you guys still selling those awesome flasks?
We have recommended reading flasks. They're cute, yellow. They have a bird on them.
Bird on it.
And they work great in movie theaters, rock concerts.
Weddings, family events.
Readings, especially.
And actually, we used that on election night. There was
That was the flask.
That was
okay.
The flask, right? See, and it worked right. It didn't leak or drip, and it was kind of sexy.
Yeah, check on our site next week. We'll have a holiday sale going.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So
everything must go.
You can give them a flask with their book.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Books.
Next week we have Joe Garden on from Project X. And the week after that is our Christmas
show. I can't wait. I know. I'm ready for Christmas.
With the scream Kwanzaa. Along with Billy.
All right.
And a rabbi.
We have a rabbi coming on. How's that?
Yeah, that's nice.
That sounds great.
A real rabbi to help us deal with how to deal with our families. during the holidays.
Make sure his place is kosher.
All right. Once again, it's been the fastest 30 minutes on the internet. I'm Mike Edison for Judy McGuire and our awesome guest today for Joe the Engineer and the Heritage Radio Network here live from Bushwick at Roberta's in Bushwick. We'll see you guys next week.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.